Good evening, everyone. It's a sweet, cool evening here in Colorado Springs, which we're relishing. And we'll try to blow some of that cool westward. So this is really, I think this is the first day of summer. I think yesterday was the last day of spring. But here we are, having taken the dive past the solstice and emerging from isolation, life in this time and place. There was a story on the radio this morning about a monument that had been carved, a huge Confederate monument with, I think, 3 or 4 Confederate generals on horseback on a mountain in a granite mountain face. And as the story, and there's a good deal of contention going on about what to do about it, whether to blow it up or preserve it. And I noticed how much the mind is drawn, that the story sort of invites one to be pulled to one side or the other. And also noticed how there's a kind of deep fatigue of the heart that arises for me, and I think for many of us, in response to the painfulness of that dilemma. And of the anger and distress with which the conversation is held. We're kind of sick of sides and yet often not knowing what to do. And here we are in this amazing and beautiful summer with the strength of the sun soaking into the earth and the fullness of that, of the darker green big leaves here and things still pushing their way up through the earth. So I want to talk for a while this evening about cons, as I said I would, about what's the action of the cons, how do they help? Why do we mess with them? Why not just study the scriptures and read articles, withdraw from complications, do a lot of meditation and devotion and develop our spiritual powers, our do service, transcend? And there's nothing wrong with all these things, right? They have power. To help us. Why koans? One thing that springs to mind for me very quickly with this question is that all of these can be co-opted to the view that you must choose. You must choose the true or the temporary. You must find something better, develop powers. And and it is good to develop, to deepen our awareness in all of the ways, right? And to soften our hearts in all of the ways. But this wonderful discovery of Chan is this, in my experience, is this very human instrument, a work of the heart's vision and imagination that draws on empathy, language, the arts of imagination, so that in witnessing an interaction in a koan, you can become it. It's magical. You can become it so freshly from your own moment in time that it busts through your unrecognized habits and gives you the actual experience of going beyond the prison of either or, to this in some way that's like a birth. The koan's response to your being stuck in a dilemma, like a black lacquer bucket, confined, unable to see in the dark, is you might find that you fall through the bottom of that very bucket, the bucketness of yourself, and find yourself in an inconceivably larger space, a place of radiance and silence that includes all of the above, completely includes black lacquer bucketness, not ridding you of it. You might even say that the radiance and silence are made of all the elements of the dilemma, are made exactly of that, of all the little pieces of that either or. So I want to give a little aside about nomenclature or typology. We might say that the first task of koans, when one first begins to get all tangled up with them, is to give you a good glimpse of the territory of this freedom we're talking about. The true in the temporary in the true. Hakuin makes a statement about this. He says, bring up the temporary and there is the true. Bring up the true and there is the temporary. They work in parallel. And I found myself with a kind of another version of this. Some of you have heard this expression from a French poet. There is another world and it is inside this one. Sometimes we find there is another world and this one is inside it. And so there is a sense of a kind of dance, a dance of coming in and opening out, bringing everything in, seeing how everything bursts out. And so the koans from the beginning offer us, if we're willing to give ourselves to them, a glimpse, glimpses, sometimes very subtle, sometimes boom, of that. And so then the second task that the cons undertake for us, just because they're here and we're here willing to play, is to help you dismantle, disassemble the structure of your delusions and limitations. So we have cons that require you to be completely silly, to discover the possibility of the impossible, to notice that your first reaction, to which your instinct is to say, not that, might be exactly what's fresh and alive in this moment, in response to the question the con asks. Like, this is the stone drenched with rain that points the way. What? You know, and then it sort of settles into you and starts to do its work. A third kind of koan that comes along are the koans that put this to the test, offering you one dilemma after another. What about this? What about this? What about if Nan Chuan holds up the cat and says, say a true word or I will cut this cat in half? What about if you're hanging from a branch by your teeth and someone comes underneath and asks you the essential question? What about that? The dilemmas. So we have cons that, having had this glimpse, offer us a chance to bring it on the road. And then we have cons that then, once we have discovered this bliss of the vastness, we have koans that are designed to undo our obsession with that, to loosen our hold on that beautiful experience and get real with the ordinary do of the day, and to find again and again that the luminosity of this moment is right here in the ordinary do of the day. So we have cons that again and again will toss us around, or in a way kind of spin us until we're dizzy enough to feel that. And then we have cons that more fully explore the territory of human interactions. Someone asks this, and someone replies this way. Someone asks, why don't you recite sutras at the beginning of the meal? And someone responds, always, I am reciting thousands and thousands and thousands of sutras. One interaction after another that lets us feel the human back and forth, the ways that we, the ways that the way it is only complete in a way in conversation. Can we have that conversation? Can we recognize that that is the conversation that we're in all the time, that's called a life? So all of these koans operate in the same territory of freedom, but in different ways, thankfully. And so it's really helpful that our ancestors made collections of them that we can take up together, and in the alone and together dance, so that that we can become more useful in this life. I think that the ancestors would like us to be useful and encourage us to allow ourselves to become more and more useful to this project of life. And so they call upon different aspects of being human. They call upon our empathy with others and with ourselves. They in the stillness of meditation and inquiry, we can notice the presence. It's not that we find bring in something that's not here, but we can notice the presence of that deep empathy, that deep desire for all to be well. And they call upon another aspect of being human, which I would call releasing the grasp on knowing. It's human for us to recognize the limitations of our knowing. And the koans encourage us to hold that lightly. It's okay. Of course you can't know this. It's not knowable that way. Relax. See what you already know in your bones. See what your bones know about this. Releasing our grasp on knowing. They call upon our ability for forgiveness. For forgiveness of life for being as it is. Forgiveness of ourselves for being as we are. Forgiveness of our others for being as we all are. They call upon our generosity, and it's a generosity of spirit that allows that. Is it possible that before we call this life, this world, ourselves, yourself wrong, before we say, this isn't it, the koans call upon a kind of generosity of spirit that is built into us that can say, could this be it? Could it? Could this be it just as it is? Could I give up the habit of constant critique? That would be generous. They call upon us to allow our own genius, the amazing power of a human heart mind. Do you believe it? Can you allow it full range of expression? The genius of your own being? The koans call upon us to do that. And they invite us over and over again to just try out the dance moves. To just do it, you know. I'll never forget being at my son's first wedding at the reception afterwards, and there was dancing going on, and I don't usually dance, and I'm not very confident a dancer, but I thought, hey, what the hey, this is my son's wedding, I'm going to dance. And he looked at me in astonishment and said, you have some moves, Mom. Which was just such a funny thing. And you know, if we allow ourselves really to be silly, to go ahead and try out some dance moves, you know, probably it'll turn out the world thinks we have some. And so that the koans invite us to just go ahead and try out some moves. So all of these ways in which the koans call upon our humanness to meet our own distress and the distress of being human. They're beautiful. you know, and we can trust them and we can develop a trust in them, that they're worth giving ourselves to. They're worth welcoming completely. And they help us tolerate the enormity and the ordinariness of the mystery of being ourselves. It's not easy for us to entertain the bigness of that. And the cons help. They let us come again and again. They reassure us. Yes, it is as big as you're getting a glimpse of. It's bigger. And it's you. It's this. It's you this morning, you know, washing your face. It's you tired at night, crawling back into bed. It's you weeping over the news. It's you wishing to be better. It's all of this. Yes, it's bigger than you think. And you can tolerate it. You can stand it. You can stand how big it is. You really can. That's what the cons keep saying. So you get easier in your own skin and a little lighter, a little easier to respond kindly, a little more subject to delight. So the koan. This koan. You know, in this time where we don't know a lot, our certainties have abandoned us and so we're wandering. We feel how much it matters what we do, and we don't know what to do or how to do it. We don't know whether to blow up the monument or keep it as a lesson, or keep it or destroy it to make peace among ourselves. What do we do with our dilemmas, our own personal ones? So it's helpful to give ourselves over to an image that's offered to us. And that's one way we can meet this koan, to give ourselves over to this odd image. This particular koan is even set for us in community, in a community where we might find, in which we might find some kinship. You know, all of us together, us black lacquer buckets, and not having to be ashamed of our black lacquer bucketness. Here we all are together. What is the folding all the way in of it, of this moment? What is the total unstinting unfurling of it, the wide beauty of it? So here the koan says, I read you a different translation than the one I sent out, because I find it just not only amusing, but so comforting to be able to read a couple of different translations and go, oh, maybe this, maybe that. How will I keep company with this, with its odd both translations? So here are both of the translations, and you can notice how they light up a little differently and they bump you a little differently. So the one that I brought into the meditation is the Cleary translation, which says, Xuefeng, teaching his community, said, pick up the whole great earth in your fingers. And it says as big as a grain of rice. Pick up the whole great earth in your fingers, and it's as big as a grain of rice. Throw it down before you. If, like a lacquer bucket, you don't understand, I'll beat the drum and call everyone to look. And the translation we're using from John and Joan says, Xuefeng said to his assembly, when I pick up this great earth, it's as big as a grain of rice. I hold it in front of your faces. but you're black, blacker buckets and can't make it out. Beat the drum, please look everywhere. And then, so in this collection, this great collection, the Blue Cliff Record, as in some of the other, some other collections, there is an introductory part, that, an introduction or a pointer. And they often are a kind of tease that can sound very dismissive, like, you know, there's hardly anybody who can get this. You know, how about you? Some of them kind of have that quality, and some of them have more the quality of an invitation. Here, sink your teeth into this, you know, put this on the tip of your tongue and taste it. What is this going to do to you? You know, let this under your robe and see how it scratches or tickles you, you know? So the introduction to this one might require glasses. Goes a little bit like this. And the pointer sometimes, so the pointer and the koans and the commentaries sometimes have this strange kind of layeredness where they will seem to be talking about how great the teacher is and how rare that quality is. But more and more, as I've worked with these over the years, I feel it more as a, oh, here's some great teacher. You're never going to be like this. Hardly anybody is. It doesn't land that way so much for me anymore as it does as a, here's a way one might be for a moment. What would that be like? Can you feel the difference in there? So it's a kind of invitation to try something on in a way. So the pointer here says, whoever would uphold the teaching of our school must be a brave-spirited fellow. Only with the ability to kill a man without blinking an eye can one become a Buddha right where he stands. This much courage, this much fearlessness, this much willing to give up your comfort and your ideas about what's appropriate. Give it all up. So it says, therefore, his illumination and function are simultaneous. Wrapping up and opening out are equal in his preaching. So we see how Chue Feng does this, make it so tiny, and then whoosh, go look for it. There's this motion of wrapping it up to here and then go look everywhere. Principle and phenomena are not two, and he practices both the provisional and the real. Anyway, so it goes on like that. It's going to be too much wordage if I read the whole thing. But anyway, then there's the case, and then there will be commentary and a verse and a commentary on the verse, and then later comments in another book. And so you get the feeling that this conversation, you know, goes on over centuries, and it's all just the conversation of real and actual people like you and me. And so you can either get stuck in the oddness of the conversation, or you can just notice that people have been meeting this particular instance of a teacher trying to help his congregation. This particular instance, people have been holding it up like a grain of rice for a very long time, and then looking widely together. What's here? What is this? what is it like right now when the clouds are hanging over Sun Mountain and the wind is blowing the oak leaves? What is it right now, sitting here in your room? And so there are some comments that come with this one that shift it, I think. So that's why I brought in those words, when spring comes in the hidden valleys and wild ravines, in places where there are no people, thousands of flowers burst into bloom. Tell me, who else do they bloom for? And later, Hakuin's comment, the fields and mountains are all abloom, blossoming as if to inspire folk songs, blossoming as if to show people. Get together as if you were looking for a lost child. And so ways to sit with this ways to carry it around, or ways to meet it, or ways to have a dream in it. Let it be a dream in you. I want to talk about more and play with more rather than talk about it so much next week. For right now, I'd like to give us just a minute or two, and I'll speak the words of those words of the koan again, and then see what kinds of things come up for you just right here and now. And before we do that, I'll just read you a couple of examples of the further commentary, just so that you get a little bit of a feel for the scope of it, for the variety of it. In a way. So Hakuin, another thing Hakuin says is, you don't see because it's too clear. You don't see because it's too clear. And does that remind you of how sometimes it reminds me of how sometimes my mind just sort of tries to make things complicated when it's not necessary. And how our teachers often say to us, just try a little bit less, you know, just don't try so hard. Can you let yourself just relax? Or a comment to the verse, when spring arrives, for whom do the 100 flowers bloom? Things don't overlap. What a mess. He sticks his head out from within a cave of tangled vines. And in a way, so sometimes these comments are to let you not revere the teacher too much, but to just look at how this poor teacher is trying hard to help us, you know, sticks his head out from within a cave of tangled vines. And then Denke saying, the words bloom for whom constitute the eye of this whole verse. So giving us a little suggestion. What if you just hang with, for whom do the 100 flowers bloom? You don't have to do anything else. You could just sort of hang out with that wonder. These flowers, who are they blooming for? Who am I blooming for? Who is that sweet breeze in the oak trees blooming for? Who is the bell ringing for? pick up. Pick up the whole great earth in your fingers, and it's as big as a grain of rice. If you don't understand, I'll beat the drum and call everyone to look. Opening the doors and windows, throwing them wide open all at once for you. In the hidden valleys and wild ravines, in places where there are no people, 100 flowers burst forth in profusion. Tell me, who else do they bloom for? So what I'd like to do now is to invite responses to the koan itself for a little while, and then I will send it out again with some more of the various notes and maybe a poem, and we will encourage you to take it with you through the week. And we'll come back next Monday and just really, really spend a leisurely time with the koan. So for now, just what is up for you about it. And then I want to leave a little bit of time for comments or questions for discussion of what I spoke about earlier. So first of all, what about, what comes up, what happens for you with this koan? And it might be anything, or you might want to say nothing. Nothing happens, which can be part of the experience too. So we're all fitting on one screen, so just speak when ready. Unmute yourself and don't hesitate. Whatever it is that's coming up, put it out there. If you dare.